Now the Lord said to Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you." What a racket! The noise was deafening. Goats bleating, oxen lowing, dogs barking, sensing a journey. Instructions yelled, sobbing farewells, music played, ram horns blowing, as amid the chaos and confusion of departure, Abram sets out to look for his destiny. Wagons roll. And before too long, there is silence, broken only by the occasional jangling of pots and pans. The grunt of a camel or braying of a disconsolate donkey, the only sounds that cut across the vast silence of the desert. And Abram is left with his thoughts. Well, he's done it now. The die is cast. He is going like God said, or like he thinks God said. When his wife Sarah reproachfully asks him where he is going, he can't say, for he doesn't know. It's God's place. God will clarify things, he believes. His job is to go. And the black figures melt into the horizon, all dressed up and nowhere terribly specific to go. Just like his father. Abram's father, Terah, before him, had up sticks and left good old, safe old, familiar old Ur of the Chaldees and made for some godforsaken spot, some obscure dot on the map. Like father, like son, as they say. You can't escape your emotional heritage. It's in the genes. But Dad, for some reason, had stopped, settled down. The vision, the dream, the compulsion, whatever it was, had been removed. It had gone cold. The easy attractions of the moon-worshipping community at Haran had cooled his ardour for the pilgrim gypsy life. Terah stayed put down some roots, settled. But the restlessness, it seems, was imprinted deep in his son Abram's character. And now this talk of God and promises and new lands, Sarah shuddered and wept a little, as women sometimes do when male logic is a mystery to them. It wasn't logic, though, that had led him here, Abram striding across the scree. There is no logic in a decision that takes a man away from the security of a good home, a good living, free from risk and anxiety, into this place, this barren hole, severing important emotional connections with the family he loved, in response to what, really? Some vague inner conviction that some God had a destiny for him? These inner voices were so suspect, intangible, tenuous. There was no face went with the inner sense of call, nothing Abram could see or touch that would enable him to identify for sure where it came from, the restlessness to follow into the mystery and dark of an unknown future, a sense of destiny that rang around his soul. No logic in any calling, whether of one of the great saints of the church who left the securities to serve, nor for the great missionaries like David Livingstone or Gladys Aylward. This is the life of faith that believes beyond cold facts, moves beyond the certainty of the seen to the uncertainty of the believed. And Abram was the first of a long line of believers who by faith go beyond what made sense, what was for sure, into that life of faith. The notion of call, the reality of being called by God to a particular work, is as fresh and disturbing now as it was then, and as intangible, as hard to explain, as difficult to justify now as ever. I interviewed many ministers for my little radio programme, Mr. T's Pleasant Sunday Afternoon, and the same theme kept coming up, and I would press them hard about it. When and how and why did they feel, their words, called to be a minister? For it makes no sense in their story, their ordered lives, their clear intelligence, their respect for reason, to act with such profound, apparent unreason. I ask them because it astonishes me too. as someone who loves mind and thought and logic and common sense, and then shifts my whole life in an unwelcome direction because of a feeling, a troublesome thought, a call from God. I wriggled and squirmed and looked elsewhere, but it would not go away. It would not leave me alone. And here I am, 50 years later. Nowadays, the process of checking out a sense of call is protracted and thorough. There are conferences for inquirers and discernment placements and a chance to explore it all. But it still seems to keep happening. And people never get beyond recognising that it's a huge act of faith. Always wondering if it's true, if it's real. Have I just imagined all this? What was he looking for, Abram, resting now in the shade of his tent? The promise to him was so undefined, a blessing of some kind, a place in history, some kind of immortality in the nationhood he would father, a place of honour in the memory and gratitude of future generations. Well, he was lucky. Other men and women of faith have gone out for much, much less. Who remembers them? The martyrs and the workers, the missionaries and the monks, the ordinary folk who have their faith and live their faith and work their socks off for their Lord, only to fade into obscurity. Not all who are invited to the journey of faith play the game for such high stakes. But they are invited nonetheless, given the promise that God is with them and that he will complete all that they are to do, all that they are to become. For the Christian, the reward of faith, the reward of the journey, is not a famous name or a parcel of land, a place in history, but a simple, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter now into the joy of your Lord. A race run to the finishing tape. It has been my unutterable privilege for all the years of my ministry to work for the Lord alongside such men and women, and to do so still. We salute those who chose to follow, who ran the race to the finish, and who kept the faith. And those who are still running. And so Abram journeys on. I've seen pictures of the place, maybe you have too, the semi-desert moonscape of the Negev. It was no easy option to journey on. Hard, unremitting graft. But Abram did it, and that's part of his contribution to our understanding of how faith works, what faith is. The long-term commitment, the slowly maturing investment, painstaking consistency, and the willingness to wait patiently, to work patiently, often without startling immediate results for what we attempt for God. It's the kind of faith evidenced by the woman to whom life has been puzzlingly cruel, who still trusts in God with all the quiet tenacity, all the real love that she would have shown if life had been easy and kind to her. That's faith. Not the cheap, enthusiastic froth and excesses of love for the God who makes life go smoothly for us. But slow-burning, dogged, weather-beaten faith. No magic moments to confirm our convictions. No special spiritual signs to make it easier. Just the rocks and the dust and the flies and the uncertainty. Abram's kind of faith. Of course, we have questions about all of this. The most searching one being, why on earth Abram? Why Abram of all people? Isn't it odd that God should choose the Jews? Is God showing us that we must learn to live with what the pundits call the scandal of particularity? The shocking revelation that our salvation comes from within the story of this scrawny little nothing of a nation, that our hopes lie in this real man, Christ, who walked in a particular place at a particular time. Other religions may have their abstractions, their universe of abstraction. Not Christianity. Like it or not, right from the start, God pins us down in history. Real time, real places, real people, Look at this man and learn about faith. See in this Jesus Christ, Son of Mary, Word made flesh, God incarnate, love incarnate. Scandal indeed. So we leave Abram for a little, framed against the big sky of the desert, a complex potpourri of insight and short-sightedness, as we'll find, a firm conviction and nagging uncertainty. Abram, the man of faith. Things look good. The land is shaping up fine. A good inheritance to leave his son, if he had one. But that, as they say, is another story.